Hello and welcome to Medi-Call episode 224. I'm Corey and here's Daryl.
Yo.
Yo, what's up?
Not much. Hot as blazes here.
Yeah, same. It's, well, I mean, hot as blazes here is like 90 degrees. I'm sure it's warmer by you.
96 today.
Whew. Yeah. Well, yeah, you win that one. But, I mean, I guess we win that one, really.
Yeah, you guys really win.
Yeah, but it's hot. It's intolerable in both places. So, we got a lot to talk about today. Historic Jumpstart has got me quite excited, and I'm saving up the gold, the gems, the historic excitement for this release on August 20th. It's been delayed a little bit, but that format's bound to look completely different, and I'm jacked up for it.
Isn't the set just huge, enormous? So it's gotta yeah. probably be delayed so they can print all the cards.
Well,
code all the cards.
Yeah, there was something happening with it. It was going to be released on the 12th, but they pushed it back to the 20th. So it's coming out late. There's some kind of consolation with some free drafts that they're giving out on Arena. You can check that out if you're interested, but that's not what we're here to talk about today.
As a programmer, I can tell you that there's probably some QA stuff that went wrong and stuff like that. So they just wanted to push it back to make sure we got a quality product.
Yeah, so mostly I think it's just it's a matter of making sure they do it right, which is, I do respect that. WotC is not one to typically go that route, so I'm happy that they're taking the time to make sure things are in order run them out.
I think we're going on 7 years that that Walrus hasn't been able to cast Court of Calling. No big deal.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Let's not MTGO this MTG Arena thing yet. It's only been a couple of years. So, there's some other bugs that have existed for a really long time.
That's what I'm saying though. They're trying to put out a quality product, unlike Wall of Roots.
Yeah. Speaking of MTGO, interesting transition here. if you'd like to try that, there are plenty of functional cards, like hundreds of thousands of functional cards beyond Wall of Roots and Court of Calling, that interaction, that you can play. And I recommend you use our promo code, Card Knock Life Podcast, all one word, for 14% off your first 3 months at manatraders.com. Thank you to our wonderful sponsor. Once again, that's Card Knock Life Podcast, all one word, for 14% off at manatraders.com. Now, that would be a great place to play Modern. Historic is now, I was going to say doomed, but I don't think it's a negative thing. I think Historic is permanently in Arena format just based on the fact that there are these keywords that can only be digital only, and I just don't see them doing that in MTGO. But there's going to be no paper equivalent of Perpetually or Conjure, or Seek, which I think is cool. I'm glad they've kind of bit the bullet on that, because it does restrict their ability to capitalize on some paper products. However, it opens up a lot of possibilities to experiment with some interesting stuff and make this format just like way different than Modern, which, the longer it exists, the more similar it's becoming to Modern and Legacy.
Yeah. That'll be very good for the format, I think.
So I'm psyched, man. But before we get into that, I do want to talk a little bit of Modern. I have been able to play Modern at my shop lately, and the turnout has been insane. There were like 30 some people. I played for like 5 hours last week on Friday. I was there till 11 o'clock. I was not expecting that. But these deck dives, man, have you been digging into these things? They're awesome. There's some really cool stuff happening in Modern.
I have been, and in fact, I spent about 6 hours of my own last weekend playing on the MTGO.
Yeah.
Playing the old five-color elementals deck that's been kicking around. That deck is actually super sweet. I've had a lot of fun and interesting moments. I'm not going to try and drill down the whole 75, because it's like a bunch of one-ofs, and then there's like some four-ofs. But mostly the deck is kind of a value-based Enter the Battlefield deck driven by Risen Reef and Omnath, Locus of Creation. So Risen Reef, whenever an elemental enters, you look at the top card of the land, put it into play, otherwise put it in your hand. All of your cards that are not ephemerate are elementals. So everything draws you a card with Risen Reef in play, and you can create a kind of unbreakable loop if your opponent doesn't have Graveyard Hate with Risen Reef and Thunderkin Awakener, which is a 2-mana 1/2 with haste that when it attacks, you can resurrect a creature from your graveyard tapped and attacking with toughness less than it, and Vesper Lark, which is the Modern Horizons card that brings back a one power creature. So you can use Vesper Lark to get back your Thunderkin Awakener attack, get back your Vesper Lark. It sacrifices it and puts it back in the graveyard at the end of turn, which triggers the Vesper Lark when at least play to get your Risen Reef back. And you can just set up this like snowball of insurmountable value that you use the pitch creatures to sort of take advantage of all the extra cards with Fury and Solitude and Endurance. So it's actually been super fun. I got to absolutely body mill because I had four Endurance in my 75 and drew my Endurance game one, and then triple Endurance in response to Tormod's Crypt plus the Crypt Incursion game two. So my opponent was very sad.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't see how mill continues to exist in Modern with all of the sideboard Kozilek and Endurances running around these days. I think it's not long for this world. It's just so easy to toss one of those in and be like, okay, don't have to think about you anymore.
Yep.
I mean, they have outs. Obviously, they can like Surgical Extraction Kozilek or whatever. But there's just so many answers to just like that are just so easy. But this deck in general is just like enters the battlefield value town. It's just insane value. I ran into this one at my event too, and the guy that was playing it wasn't on the Thunderkin Awakener plan. He was just like he was just straight up with the Ephemerate like Evoke Elementals plan, which I you're very fond of. We've talked about that quite a bit, and this deck is all about that with like Furies and Solitudes and stuff and blinking those guys. But I don't know what to make of this, but this wasn't the first time I had that conversation that night, but the guy was playing, had this deck, and he said, like, before the game, he's like, this is the first time I'm playing this deck. I just put it together. And already from that point, it was like, he started playing this deck, and it was completely blinged out. It was like all of the full art, mythic elementals, like the Strixhaven, like, Mystical Archive Ephemerates and stuff like that. Just completely blinked out. And then another guy later on that night was playing the kitchen deck. It was like completely blinged out, like all foil with the old borders and stuff. And it was just interesting. It was like both players were seemingly like newer to the game, yet they went straight for the money. And that was just really interesting to me. I think the game presents a lot more opportunity to do that these days, but it's not just the whales that are buying into those like $30 solitudes versus the $20 solitudes, for example. And I don't know, it's just
people
interesting.
People like shiny, man.
Oh man.
People like shiny. People like art that caters to their mind. And so like if they see the solitude art and they like it like a lot, then it caters to their brain and they want to look at it that way. And so like you don't want to stare at cards that like make you unhappy.
Yeah, it's
there's
very
a certain amount of that.
That full art solitude is beautiful too, but I guess I'm just interested because it seems to me like even for newer players, like the price to this game really isn't a barrier. You know, like you would look at this and be like, oh my god, this deck is like the price on the tabletop of this deck, it's $1,600. so that's insane.
So Corey, I think we also come from the generation of jaded grinders who like, you know, we're saving up their lunch money to buy their Chromas or their Rathakas or their Fetchlands. So I think, you know, a lot of people have recognized that this is a luxury hobby and treated as such. Whereas we're like the jaded old school binder grinders that are like, oh, how can I, let me find the Dent and Ding sale at Star City where they have their, like that was the first thing I always did at Gen Con was I sought out the Star City heavily played table. Like Star City had like five booths or whatever, and they always had one that was just all the beat up shit.
Yeah.
And so every time I went to a convention, I immediately sought out the beat up table because they had all the duels and fetches and old school cards and was like, how can I get like the most beat up stuff at the cheapest price so that I can play my deck?
Yeah, that's fair.
So like that was always how I did it.
Starting this game as an adult with some disposable income versus beginning in middle school where you're like cutting grass to like buy a deck of I would go cut grass and I'd go straight to the grocery store and or the drugstore and I'd buy a box of the, you know, those 75 card random precons or not precons, but the random boxes of like Champions of Kamigawa. It was like a big pack. You get three rares in them. It was like you could play it as a deck because they would come with lands, but it was literally just random cards assorted by rarity. And it was just like that set had so many like bad, like crazy specific cards that like you'd run into like some rares that were like they just did nothing.
Kodama of the North Tree.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was my life. It was like once a week I could go cut the grass, pull some weeds, and then go cash out for a box of 75 random cards. And yeah, but you know, I guess the thing is that those options for all that bling didn't exist. We didn't have those full arts and stuff back then. The best thing you could get was the foils, which were just furl to no end. Yeah. So I think that's just an interesting take on this, because it doesn't just appeal to the kids who are buying the Fortnite skins and stuff. It's everyone, you know, everyone's willing to take those options. And I'm just looking at like my arena decks, and even there's so much potential for like every other card has some like alternate style, and it's pretty cool. You can really express yourself with your deck building in different ways. And so I think they've done a good job with that.
Yeah,
that's some positivity from me. I don't give them enough props.
Positivity about the rising price of Magic from Core. That's unbelievable.
Hey, if there's an option to pay less, yet they you know, there's this is the right way to do it, I believe. You know, like you can buy the budget version if you just need the card to play. Yet many people opt for the premium version. That's the way to cash out on this, and I can support that option. But if it's like there's only one and it's the foil Korvald that you can only get from wherever the hell you could get that card, I can't even remember, the booster box or whatever.
Oh, Commander.
It's Commander, yeah.
Throwing a Eldraine Commander.
And it's
yeah.
Like, oh God, then we have problems. Okay. I want to bring this deck up because you played a deck that I was really interested in playing, but I don't have the elementals and paper to do it. There's like five Omnaths in this damn thing and like eight of the evoke dudes. They're like just a ton of mythics. But I put together this one that seemed like a Daryl deck to me, in that it has like the win conditions are strictly like planeswalkers or like make tokens with Castle Ardenvale and kill them. But it's
all right, I'm here for it.
Jeskai Control with no one drops. Except for Prismatic Ending, which is, you know, functionally a one drop, and then four Chalice of the Voids.
All right, I'm here for this.
So
I can get on board with it. You definitely get stomped kind of hard by Raghavan and friends, because they get under the Chalice. But I like these creative ideas. Lots of Lightning Helix, I assume.
No Lightning Helix in these lists. I did put Lightning Helix in mine, and that card was a powerhouse, but instead what they do is they're playing Fire and Ice, and so that card has insane value these days, and I found that out. I was playing the Is It Blitz deck with, what's the one mana Lava Dart? That card is crazy, because everyone's playing these, like, $400 worth of Raghavan in their deck, and you just play this common that deals one damage, and it's, like, problem solved, you know? It's just so easy to kill a monkey with one damage. So Fire and Ice is like, the ultimate, you know, two Raghavans for the price of one.
Yeah, like, I definitely played a lot of games with Elementals, because a lot of the creatures in the Elementals deck are 1/1s. I played against, like, the Temur Rhinos decks, and, like, it made me want to pull my hair out, because they just always had Fire Ice, and they just, like... Fire Ice, you're like Risen Reef and something else, and you're just like, oh God.
Yeah, card is awesome. That's what drew me to it. So yeah, four Wraths, four Supreme Verdicts. I'm for it. So basically it's just, it gets the hard lock. Chalice of the Void is insanely powerful right now. You can put it on zero against a lot of decks. Asmo is a card you have to cast for zero, as is Mishra's Bauble. And that card you cast frequently when you have Emery in your deck. So there's a lot of value here.
Hammer Time decks too. Like Hammer Time is a big player right now.
Yeah.
And so you hit all the zeros with like the bone saws and stuff like that. And then you can turn off the hammers and the scarred as aids. And so you just have to beat like a pile of Stoneforge Mystics and Pure Steel Paladins, which not necessarily easy, but you have removal spells to do that. So
yeah, I did lose against that deck though. They were playing it was the mana situation. Honestly, the games I lost were because of the mana, because you're playing like Archmage's Charm and Counterspell, which are heavy on blue, but you also need to represent double white for Supreme Verdict. And you need to do that like consistently by turn four to survive in a lot of cases, because you're not doing a whole lot in turns one and two, because you don't have one drops aside from Prismatic Ending. And then Chalice of the Void isn't really doing much to, like, you know, keep you alive against aggressive decks. So if you miss that second white source by turn four, then you're in trouble. And these decks are playing like, and you really have to. You have to play a ton of these castles. So there's one Castle Ardenvale, and then there's three Vantress in this list. I was running just one. I only had one at the time. Couldn't find the other couple, but I wanted them because when you're Chalice locking your opponent, you need to scry to find like something to do. All right, cool. So we're going to switch gears here to Historic. We've got Jumpstart Historic to look at. I have pinned two decks that I want to take a look at specifically because they're two strategies that are particularly interesting to me because of the fact that they're like completely new strategies that are given life because of this new set. Daryl, I know you haven't played a whole lot of Historic, but I have not. We've been discussing it on this podcast for some time. The meta is heavy control. There's a lot of control, tons of Jeskai control, and most of the Jeskai decks are doing things with like Magma Opus and Torrential Gearhook. There's a lot of ramp strategies. A lot of them kind of like leaning into control. There's just a ton of blue in general, and the format is generally pretty hostile towards creatures unless you're like super aggressive, and even then there's not a whole lot of like mono red. You would think like mono red would be represented like for the creatures, but there's not a ton of that. So mid-range is pretty much non-existent at this point, with the exception of like the sacrifice decks. There's like the kind of like aristocracy sacrifice cat oven decks. And then I should say green white Selesnya Company is a thing, and that deck is pretty good. So there's some like legitimate like hate bears like strategies, and I've been playing quite a bit of them because there's just a ton of support for white creatures that make your opponent's life miserable. Redain, Archon of whatever it is, they can only play one spell a turn.
Rule of Law Archon.
Yeah, Archon of Emeria. Thank you, Thalia, and then like Luminarch Aspirant is just a house. But Odonto Vanguard is like one of my favorite cards to play these days because control players are always really
kill that thing.
When yeah,
I you said the name of that card and I had nightmares. I played against that card so much, and I can't stand it. It's just it's big and it never dies and it's ugh.
Yeah.
Give me Tragic Slip or give me Death.
There's the Anger of the Gods in the format. There's also the one that can exile even and odd creatures. There are lots of ways to deal with it, but not a ton of easy ones.
Anger doesn't beat Odonto Vanguard.
Because
it has to be destroyed.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's that one way.
It's like just like neg one effects, and then like Languish would do it if that's a thing, but like yeah, Extinction Event is a good one.
Extinction Event, that's the one that gets it a lot. Yep. Portable yep. Hole will grab it. Other Exile, Sacrifice, Trial of whatever the Black Trial is, that one gets played with.
Trial of Ambition, I think.
Yeah, but yeah, I've been playing Death Shadow actually, and that card is good friends with Death Shadow. It's pretty crazy.
Tonto Vanguard, pay your life away. Death Shadow, attack you. Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to these new cards. There's Ranger Captain of the Oath coming out. But yeah, with control being so prevalent, I'm a little nervous for Archmage's Charm. I had no idea that was in the set until I started prepping for this podcast. But holy cow. The mana base is not as accessible for triple blue as it is in modern, you know, without the fetches. Yeah. But, you know, we'll find a way.
I mean, I definitely think you can make your mana base that way. So, like, you figure you just play eight of each of the blue check, like, eight of each of the blue checks, for, like, if you're playing three colors, four and four, and then four and four shocks, and then, like, I don't know what other lands are in the format, like, maybe, if you're playing, like, Jeskai, you play a Triome or two. So, like, you can get there.
Yeah,
for
the
sure.
Triomes help. Yeah, that's true. It's going to be interesting. This set is going to completely obliterate the meta. We're going to see so much change, and I think that's needed because the last few standard releases have done almost nothing to Historic. You know, very little. Yeah. It's the immovable object after the Strixhaven stuff has come out with Brainstorm and all of these like really big powerful cards. So, yeah. So there's a lot to do, but I am hopeful that these two strategies that I'm going to talk about. I wanted to preface this conversation with that discussion on like just the control decks being everywhere. There's just an abundance of wrath like spells out there. I think these two are strong and have a chance to kind of get their foot in the door of Historic. Those being Ephemerate Soul Herder and humans. I think humans has some potential. So Daryl, you're our resident ephemerate expert. We're going to talk about the difference in the modern, like just the core to that deck, because I know it's really, you know, yeah, can be anything really in modern. And then what we've got access to in historic and what we're getting access to with this new set. So what does that deck look like?
Ephemerate lover here, yeah.
Yeah.
So really, from my perspective, the basis of this deck, so it started with Soul Herder and Ephemerate Alcon coming out. But really, the core of this deck is green-white, because it's really Eternal Witness and Ephemerate. That's sort of the combo. You Ephemerate your Eternal Witness, you get a card back from your graveyard, you rebound your Ephemerate. The way Eternal Witness and Ephemerate and all that interacts on the rebound, the Ephemerate goes to the graveyard and can be targeted by your Eternal Witness. So you can return it to your hand and continue to like do this loop to be able to just like, if you have a spell that you're looping, you can loop that. If you need to get a specific creature back, you can do that. That's sort of the key. People have over time done like combo decks with this, where they'll put a Time Warp in their deck so that you can Ephemerate your Eternal Witness, pick up your Time Warp, cast Time Warp, and have this 6-mana take all the turns loop, where eventually you get more lands in the play and you cast some 1/1s and 2/1s and you beat down with them or whatever, and that's how you win the game. But really the core is like enter the battlefield creatures, Ephemerate Eternal Witness.
Yeah.
Soul Herder is obviously a good reason to go blue, just because it's another one of these blink effects that happens every turn. Sort of like another Ephemerate. So realistically, we have Timeless Witness, so that's our Eternal Witness proxy. It's a little slower, but still fine.
Eternalized Witness.
Eternalized Witness, yeah. Timeless Witness. So Timeless Witness Ephemerate is that core. You still have it. But like a lot of what you'll see, you're not going to see what most iterations of Soul Herder have gotten to now in Modern, which is that there's a lot of tutoring, a lot of like Elladom Rescall, and recently with the printing of Imperial Recruiter. It's become like a very toolboxy deck. Like we didn't discover Elladom Rescall until further into the life cycle. It was kind of like four ofs. So you're going to see something similar to that, but you just want some like good generic enter the battlefield draw effects to kind of move through your deck. You want Eternal Witness to kind of staple it all together and get all your things back. Soul Herder and Ephemerate do all the blinking, and then just like powerful effects that disrupt your opponent and move you towards victory. So like that's kind of the combination, is like Eternal Witness, Ephemerate, Soul Herder is the engine. You want some engine pieces that draw you cards as you move through your deck and gain you value. And then you want haymakers and things that interact with your opponent to sort of push the game to a close. So that's the stew, so to speak. So as far as like good interactive pieces, I know that one of the biggest ones recently is our friend Skyclave Apparition. That's going to eat up a lot of things in most formats. And between that and Elite Spellbinder, you have kind of interaction on the spell side where you can disrupt your opponent's hand by digging through it with Spellbinder and ephemerating it and blinking it with Soul Herder. And then you can sort of interrupt your opponent's battlefield by blinking Skyclave Apparition a lot. You have 1/1s and 2/2s that are sitting around that can block the generic tokens that you generate from Skyclave Apparition. And you can also do like the old school Oblivion Ring tricks, where if you cast Skyclave and ephemerate it with the trigger on the stack, they don't get their elemental or their illusion, and you kill one of their things, then kill another one of their things. So like that trick's there. So you have those as sort of interaction. And so this is where my exact knowledge of what is happening in this format is sort of lacking. For cantrip creatures, you have Elvish Visionary. I know that elves is a thing.
Yeah.
And so it's like, are there any other good 2CMC cantrip creatures?
Yeah, so I've got a list of your 2CMC options that I would consider worthy of consideration. Now, there's actually a 1CMC, quote-unquote, cantrip creature on this list, too. Because your choice, you know, compared to like modern Soul Herder decks, we don't have like Noble Hierarch, you know, and I think that's notable. Like you're doing like almost nothing on turn one, but Thraben Inspector's in the format, and I think we're to the point where we need to consider this guy in historic.
So,
I'll
talk you through why that doesn't make sense to me. The problem is that this deck is so hungry that like a lot of times you see Soul Herder decks move towards Aether Vial. Because like you have so many like 3 and 4 mana spells that you're trying to get to, that like investing 2 mana after you invest some mana on a later turn to draw a card, mm-hmm. it's very rare that you have that option. And if you're investing mana to draw a card, you'd rather almost invest the 3 mana in drawing exactly Yorion mm-hmm. to have this big time blink engine to kind of go, depending on what your board looks like. So it's like, it's kind of hard to find a space to fit in 2 mana draw a card.
Yeah. So this
that you can't blink.
So then slight tangent then, because this is kind of triggering this, and I'll come back to the rest of the 2 mana options is, this is what concerns me, is your Eternalized Witness, your Timeless Witness costs 4 mana. And generally speaking, this deck is going to be a little bit hungrier for mana because your options are going to be more expensive. You don't have, you know, modern yeah. level cards. We don't have Noble Hierarch. Are we going to be forced to play something like Llanowar Elves in a deck like this just to get to, you know, critical velocity here for...
I mean, it depends on the twos that we can dig up.
So,
if they're good enough twos that can like help us survive the game, like a two that would just like be the Stone Cold, would just be like, do we have like Wall of Omens or like Watcher of Tomorrow? If we get like that plus Elvish Visionary, that'd be plenty of twos. You need 8 to 10 twos thereabouts. So,
we do not have Wall of Omens. We have, let's see here. And we don't have Wall of Roots either. We have, Elvish Visionary is what we have.
Yeah. Snow Watcher Tomorrow didn't come in this set either.
No, there's other stuff four. Like Watcher that four. Though. Yeah. Or Watcher 4 Tomorrow. No, that one, that's the, guy from Modern Horizons now.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That would be very good, though. There's stuff like that that will grab specific things, like mostly artifact type of stuff, like Glint Nest Crane type of stuff. I don't know if that's
not going to do it.
Historic, though. But okay, so here's what you have, and these are all not ideal. But Loyal Warhound, I think, is worth consideration. It can only be used a few times because it's the, you know, the equivalent of like the Knight of the White Orchid. It's 1 and a white for a 3/1 vigilance. Enters the battlefield. If your opponent has more lands than you, you search for planes put on the battlefield tapped. Basic planes, that is. So there's that. Charming Prince is the other option I have on this list. And that's about all I have for 2 drops right now.
I think you definitely play Prince at this point because even though the format's not aggressive, it's just like a 2/2. And if you end up as a Yorion deck, it gives you the ability to loop Yorion to like loop your board.
Sure.
So like that, if you end up in an 80 card version, that feels kind of free. But yeah, your twos are sorely lacking, and so it's going to be kind of hard. You might have to fill your twos in with spells. You might have to use like, I don't know, whatever good 2 mana counters are in this format.
Yeah.
Like you might have to fill in your deck with like, play some of those and like really lean into like 3 drops are the key here. You might play Growth Spiral even to try and get out there on lands.
Oh man,
yeah, like you're definitely mana hungry and looking to get to 3s and 4s.
Can we just have like, Coiling Oracle, please?
I mean we do. It's just called Risen Reef.
Oh god, yeah.
To be fair, we have Coiling Oracle. We have we have Coiling Oracle at home. Shows you Risen Reef.
Yeah.
But yeah. So like the key is though here, like a lot of the threes that you have that you'll play in like most of your modern decks. Like most of the threes from modern are there except for Eternal Witness, which is just Timeless Witness. But yeah, like you have Night of Autumn, you have Risen Reef, you have Skyclave Apparition, you have Elite Spellbinder. You don't have Vendilion Click, which kind of sucks, but you have Deputy of Detention. The key is just going to be finding the right numbers.
Yeah.
Just because of the fact that you don't have anything like Elidomeri's Call to like create a tutoring package. Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, now it's kind of risky to just play a bunch of one-ofs. Like you want them in there because you want to draw them, but like you don't have them on command. So like what 1-ofs and 2-ofs do I play? How do I fill in the numbers, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's the 2s are really awkward, but it's when you get to the 3s, the 3 mana spells, where you get really excited. And when you're talking about like these little singleton things that gets you really excited for this deck. So
yeah, absolutely.
I mean, you're talking about like all these like silver bullets and all this like fun, you know, this fun that you can have with this. There's like the list is huge. Like the value is In, like we talked about, Skyclave Apparition is like an excellent target for this. Deputy of Detention is a possibility. Militia Bugler gets you major value. Knight of Autumn, Renegade Rallier, Revolts, Risen Reef is out there. Emiel the Blessed is the unicorn. Remember that guy?
No.
I'll come back to that one and read it in a sec.
Oh, wait, is that the one that blinks other things?
Yeah. Yeah. Here, let me read that one, because that's a very unusual card. Doesn't get played very often. It's 2WW for a 4/4 legendary creature unicorn. So this might be like a one of if it makes the cut. This is kind of a costly inclusion here. It's 3:: exile another target creature you control, then return it to the battlefield under its owner's control. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you may pay a hybrid green or white. If you do, put a +1/+1 counter on it. If it's a unicorn, put 2+1/+1 counters on it instead.
So this card might actually be very good, because one thing that I actually have wanted to play in the past as a one of in a lot of my Soul Herder decks was Eldrazi Displacer.
Oh yeah.
To have an instant speed way to blink my things to protect them. And Eldrazi Displacer costs like that perfect amount of mana. 3 is that collected company thing. But it was colorless mana, and you never wanted to warp your mana base to try and put like a bunch of brush lands and stuff in it to try and like make Eldrazi Displacer be a thing. But I've always wanted the ability to like pay two or three, you know, some number of mana and just be like, all right, blink my thing you're targeting, or, oh, okay, I passed with mana up end of turn. Okay, I'm going to blink this and blink that, or, you know, like that is exciting. And it actually is functionally has the ability to like make your team actually like reasonable attackers, because like, all of the creatures in this is just like they're 1/1s and 2/1s. They're not big.
Right.
So like you do struggle to close the game out. So this card actually being around to close the game out, you just like make a 3/2 Timeless Witness, or your Risen Reef is a 2/2, or you blink your Illustrationary, it's a 2/2 now. Like that is a non-zero thing to like make these generic knuckleheads you're gaining value off of a little stronger.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Eldrazi Displacer is no joke. That's one I was immediately looking for in this format. I think that would be really sweet to have access to in Historic. Unfortunately, it's not a part of this yet, but this guy does. I didn't really consider the similarity to Eldrazi Displacer, even though it's so obvious until you said that. but yeah, that's a good way to put it. I like that.
Yeah. So like, I think it definitely makes the cut.
Yeah, so you mentioned Skyclave Apparition is the way to deal with like problematic permanents on the battlefield. Another one that I really like, kind of a pet card of mine that I think is worth consideration here, is Tolsimir, Friend of Wolves. Are you familiar with this guy?
Is that the like 5-mana guy that makes a 3/3 that fights?
Yeah. Yeah, so let me read him because he's kind of unusual. 2GG white, legendary creature, Elf Scout. He's a 3/3, enters the battlefield. Create a legendary 3/3 green and white elf token. When a wolf enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 3 life, and that creature fights up to one target creature you don't control.
That token is definitely a wolf named Vosia, by the way. It's not an elf.
What did I say?
Corey said elf. It's a legendary wolf token named Vulja.
Yeah, it is. Vosia. Vosia, friend to Vosia. Elves. He's friend to wolves. He's an elf. His friend is a wolf. My bad.
Yeah. So it makes a 3/3 legendary wolf that fights, and when a wolf fights it, you gain 3 life.
Like, yeah, this guy's like the Historic Huntmaster of the Fells, though. He's sweet. Like, gains you the life, he puts out 2 bodies. Like,
it's not a terrible top end. Like, you're not going to play 2 or 3 of them.
No, maybe one.
But for like things you want at the top of your curve, like, you're going to probably play one. You're going to play like a Thassa Deep Dwelling just because it's like an extra Soul Herder that's indestructible. The key really is kind of like, what are your haymakers? So for like in Modern, like, my haymakers are the more expensive stuff I had. Like, you get to play Kiki Jiki combo because you have Felidar Guardians. It's like, you know, you Felidar Kiki Jiki or Restoration Age Kiki Jiki, and you could chain them together because you would Elodomri's Call for Eternal Witness. Pick up Elodomri's Call. Elodomri's Call for Restoration Angel. Blink Eternal Witness. Pick up Elodomri's Call. Elodomri's Call for Kiki Jiki. Play Kiki Jiki, make Infinite Witness, or make Angels or whatever. So, like, that was a thing you'd do. But we don't have Kiki. We don't have Call. So it's like, okay, what are our top ends going to be? That guy making 3/3s is not a bad top end. Like, it's going to clear the board. It's going to gain you a bunch of life. And then you're just going to have, like, 5 power left behind. Something, I don't know if they printed Revelark. Revelark would be a fantastic top end.
No,
just generate you a bunch of value.
Yeah, all right.
But
This would be a great home for Revelark. I would love that because that card's not seen any play in Modern anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I play it as a one of in this deck just because like it's extremely good.
Yeah.
With your collection of one and two power creatures. So I think really your top end is probably going to end up being Emile the Blessed in like a higher count because it really is like your finisher. You don't have a Kiki Jiki type thing. You don't have something that's going to like grind your opponent to dust that you can things that I would do in Modern is you could eventually lock them out with Venser or Avalanche Riders. You would destroy all their lands or bounce all their lands or bounce all their permanents that mattered and like leave them with nothing. So like, Things that I'm interested in trying to see if there's a parallel to an historic. Is there something that bounces a permanent, or is there something that bounces or destroys a land?
You're talking like big mana.
Not huge mana. Like you probably want to cap out at five here.
Oh yeah, no. Like I mean, I'm thinking Meteor Golem. You know, bounces a permanent for five is hard to come by. I don't think I can think of anything.
Yeah, that card. That Meteor Golem is literal unplayable unless the format is just so unbelievably glacially slow.
There's a guy, Gain Control of... This is not what you're looking for, but this triggered my memory of a different card. I think it's three mana.
Agent of Treachery would be dope, but it doesn't do the thing. So, yeah.
There's a guy from the Dungeons and Dragons set that enters the battlefield and gains control of a creature an opponent controls until it leaves the battlefield. Now, obviously, when you blink it, they get it back. But there's a lot of, you know, shenanigans you can play where you gain it, you attack with it, it becomes tapped. It's five mana, Mind Flayer.
So if you want actual shenanigans, by the way, I'm just going to bring up shenanigans.
Yeah.
Because this is something I learned from playing EDH. You play Thassa in higher quantities if you're going to play a card like that. Because when you blink a creature with Thassa, it doesn't return it to its owner's control. It returns it to your control.
Oh, really?
So if you steal your opponent's creature and blink it with Thassa, it remains on the battlefield under your control.
And it's like a whole new instance then, right? It doesn't worry about the whole...
Correct.
The whole thing.
It will die. Cool. If it dies, it goes to their graveyard.
Sure, yeah.
But it will be yours permanently. And like if you then blink your guy that steals things... It doesn't go back to them. Then it's a new because it's a new creature, and you can steal a new thing, and then blink it with Thassa, and it stays with you. So like, you could slowly steal all your opponent's stuff, but like,
yeah. Nice.
Just the thing you can consider. But yeah, I think like your deck is probably like the deck kind of in its most reasonable form is probably going to look like just kind of spitballing off the top of my head four Elvish Visionary, four Ephemerant. Some number of Charming Prince, 2 to 4, and then 3 Soul Herder, a couple Thassa, 4 Risen Reef, so you get like another one of those cantrip creatures, and then like a collection of Night of Autumn, Deputy Detention, Skyclave Apparition, and the Paulo, Elite Spellbinder.
Oh yeah, Elite Spellbinder is gas. Yeah.
To just interact with your opponent, and then like your top end will be like Emile the Blessed, maybe Restoration Angel. Maybe Yasharn. And then you'll have like 4 Timeless Witness.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Yasharn, but I think that one absolutely belongs in the 75 somewhere. That card beyond its ability to grab lands is just
right.
Yeah, sacrifice that. Like I mentioned, that's a big deck right now, and that card just single handedly shuts it down.
Yeah, so sacrifice is a big thing. Like you definitely play like some number, like 2 Yasharn in 75 probably, and then if you want to. If you want to play 80, you play 80, you play Yorion, you play the max on, you play Restoration Angels and maximum Charming Princes, but then like you just figure out like how, you know, you need an extra maybe like 6 cantrip creatures and then you need some more interaction because you just don't have, the problem is you just don't have the tutors. You can maybe play Collected Company, like if that's your bag, I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I think there's something to go with, at least to start. This deck may be like, you know, just like tier like 2 or 3 for a while until it finds access to like some more reliable like 1 and 2 drops. I think it might be a little too slow to get going, and then once it gets going, it's like it's just value. I don't know. I think like you really have to, you almost have to force those Llanowar Elves into here to keep up. This is a fast format, believe it or not.
I don't know. That's the part I don't know. It's like I don't particularly want to play Land War Elves because the card is such a terrible top deck. But yeah. If we're in a format where you have to play Land War Elves, then you just have to play Land War Elves.
I think you do, unfortunately. And it's tough, especially with this many three drops. Like, a turn to Elite Spellbinder is really strong, and I think that's worth going into. You could also consider some number of Collected Company. It's a little awkward with Eternal or Timeless Witness being four. That sucks.
Yep.
But the benefit is, like, everything else in the deck, aside from Restoration Angel and Yasharn, are threes, and there's a lot of value at three. So
Emile. Like, you're going to play Emile.
Yeah, if you're going to play Emile. Okay, anyways, so there's that. I think we should move on to the next deck.
All right, I'm here for it.
Okay, the next deck is Humans. And Humans is a deck that we're all very familiar with in Modern because it's been around for ages. Yep. Humans has been attempted in Historic a number of occasions, but there's really just not enough there to make it possible. The Humans matter cards that exist right now are, like, limited to General Kudrow. That might be it. You know, as far as, like, why to be in Humans specifically, but then of course there's, like, Unclaimed Territory type of reasons to do that as well.
Okay, cool.
You know, like mana base, but yeah. I have messed around with Pyre of Heroes, which is a card that I'm sure many people have forgotten about.
Ah, yes,
remember we talked about that one, and I think that is kind of where my head's at with Humans, because we don't have access to Aether Vial, so we're not gonna be doing, like, this super aggressive Humans deck, but I think there might be something to be said about, like, a toolboxy Humans, and Pyre of Heroes is no joke. Like, an Esper version might be really good.
I'm gonna stop you here,
yeah,
before we get started with Pyre of Humans.
Yeah, go on.
Why am I playing Pyre of Humans? Like, is there a combo? Or, like, what? Because it's, like, so much mana. Like, so Birthing Pod was very good because it was such a low mana, like, low intensity mana investment.
Yeah.
That you could, like, make a 3-drop and turn it into a 4-drop. And then, like, 2-drop the exact 4-drop you needed to draw. All for the cost of, like, actually casting a 4-drop.
Yeah.
So Pyre of Heroes is, like, you make a 3-drop and you still have to invest 2 mana to make a 4-drop. And it has to be a human. So, like, that there's a lot of restriction and, like, a lot of, like, it feels too slow, right? So, like, is there a combo that makes me want to play this Pyre thing?
There is not a combo, but there are some big payoffs, and I'm getting to that.
Okay, I just, that was the first thing that jumped to my mind, and I just wanted to get it out there and ask it, because it seemed like Pyre felt, like, a little off.
All right. Yeah, in fact, I have a deck that I had been playing. I came across a few months ago, and prior to any mention of Historic Jumpstart, there was a Humans Pyre deck that is in all 5 colors that, you know, I tried to some decent results, but it was just missing a few pieces. Now, there's a couple of, like, really big adds that Humans are getting from Historic Jumpstart that I think make me want to kind of reconsider this. So the number one is Thalia's Lieutenant. That's huge, right? That's a huge reason to be in Humans.
That's a giant Humans matter card that's insanely good.
But there's another one, because as I mentioned, like, there's a shit ton of control in this format, and tribal decks tend to just completely fold to Anger of Gods,
Verdict, yeah,
Wrath of God, and Esper Sentinel is a human. Did you know that?
I did, actually. I played against Esper Sentinel a lot. Modern.
Yeah, and that card's coming out in this deck, in this this Jumpstart as well. Ranger Captain of Eos is one that's going to show up. I think, and if we're looking into, like, a Pyre of Humans route, that's value that can be kind of singled in there. And yeah, Blade Splicer is another.
You pick up your Esper Sentinel. Yeah.
And then I'm just going to kind of list off just a ton of guys that already exist in the format right now. This is kind of, like, leaning towards, like, a white, blue, black kind of focus, but there are, like, some of the payoffs if you're going to do, like, the Pyre route, because I'm kind of, like, really considering all, like, versions of Humans at this point. Some of the payoffs, if you're gonna do the Pyre route, are in, like, red and in green as well, and some of them, like, in really awkward mana costs that you're unlikely to actually just hard cast, so keep that in mind. So at one drops you've got Dauntless Bodyguard, Giant Killer, which I think is a fantastic one, especially if you're playing Ranger Captain or any other Eos guys. Thraben Inspector. Okay, sure. So there's some strong cases for one. Obviously, you're missing Champion of the Parish, but there you go.
Yep.
The two drops are actually pretty similar to your options for modern humans. You've got Thalia, you've got Meddling Mage, you've got Containment Priest, which is a house right now. Honestly, I've blown out some of these collected company decks. Charming Prince. Hero of Precinct 1 is an interesting one. There's a build that could really leverage that guy. He makes human tokens. Luminarch Aspirant is a hell of a card.
What is that one?
That is the guy that at the beginning of your combat step, you put a +1/+1 counter on one of your creatures.
Oh, that's just
two
mana, good.
1/1. Yeah, it's very good. Tithe Taker, extremely good.
Yep.
Kite Sail Freebooter. And then these last two are pet cards of mine. I've been playing a black and white deck with Killian Ink Duelist. Are you familiar?
You have to read this.
Okay. This guy probably doesn't fit into the humans tribal deck, but it is a human, and it's a good card. It is white-black for a 2/2 lifelink menace, which, you know, like, maybe enough reason to just, like, run this guy as, like, a 1/1 or something, right? But it also says, spells you cast that target a creature cost 2 less to cast.
Okay.
So I played it in, like, a black-white Hate Bears deck.
Yeah. Actually not terrible at all.
Yeah, he is legendary, though. And then Silver Quill Silencer, I really enjoy. Silver Quill Silencer, white and a black for a 3/2, enters the battlefield, choose a non-land card name. Whenever an opponent casts a spell with the chosen name, they lose 3 life and you draw a card. This card's very good, and very underrated, I think.
Better than Meddling Mage, question mark. Just because it has the extra power?
No, it's probably not better than Meddling Mage. But in a different kind of build, like if you're going to be like, you know, eschewing the blue, like if you're going to be going like white-black humans, which I think there's a case for that, Thoughtseize, turn 1, turn 2, Silver Quill Silencer, turn 3, Elite Guildmage, you've got a real hateful curve there.
Spellbinder, I assume you're talking about?
Yeah, that's the one, Spellbinder, thanks. So there's all of that. So those are your two Elite drops. What was that?
Elite Guildmage confused me.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I'm good now.
What is Elite Guildmage? Is that a card? Oh, that's the 4 mana. That guy's pretty good too. I didn't even put him in my list, but that's a human as well. 4 mana gain some life draw card. All right, and then my 3 drops here. I've got Acclaimed Contender, which is a guy that if you have a knight, you can look at the top few cards of your library, put a knight in your hand. Not very good, but like you could build a knight humans tribal deck. I thought I'd throw him in here anyway. Elite Spellbinder is excellent. I think that one is like an auto include if you're going to be building humans. General Kudrow, more for the black white plan, and just a fantastic card. We've seen it in modern. Kumball is in
soup.
Yeah,
soup Nazi, baby. Let's go.
Yeah, guy's awesome. And then one of the biggest reasons to splash blue here, you know, I haven't mentioned any other blue cards prior, but Hostage Taker is a human and is very good if you are going to be going the Pyre of Heroes route, because there's a lot of 3 drops that are worth getting. A lot of those 3 drops have excellent enters battlefield triggers. Flip them into a Hostage Taker. You can even turn the Hostage Taker into something else, and you after you've cast the creature that it's got that's taken hostage.
And frequently, if you're pyring in a Hostage Taker, if you're not doing it on the same turn you played your 3 drop, it's like if you just curve pyre, 3 drop, Hostage Taker, like you typically have 2 mana, you're probably gonna be able to cast the thing you took on the same turn.
So. Yeah, no kidding. So that was the big reason to run pyre. There's a couple more. I've also got, I don't know how these guys got out of line here, but Militia Bugler is a big one, 3 drop. I got Renegade Rallier fits well into the Pyre plan. It's generally pretty good. Sisse is a human. If you're running a toolbox plan, there are quite a few of these that are legends, including Judith, the Scourge Diva.
Yeah, I was about to say, I feel like I'm more interested in playing, like, mentally, I'm just, like, think of humans as an aggressive deck, so, like, you're right, I might not be in the right sphere. But, like, my brain's just like, all right, let's just play a bunch of Esper Sentinel. Back it up with Thalia's Lieutenant, because that, like, pumps it. And General Kudrow, so I'm here for that, too. And then, like, all right, let's just fill it out with humans. Like, okay, maybe we can splash for Meddling Mage if our mana's good enough. Containment Priest is a good Hate Bear. Taxing Thalia and Tithe Taker are good. And then, like, your top end is just, like, General Kudrow, Elite Spellbinder, and then you play some number of Kanbal and Glasspool Mimic, so that you have your functional Phantasmal Image.
Yeah, I mean that's fair. Like the Pyro deck is a little meme-y. I'll be honest with you. So I think that more like aggro slanted hate bearsy kind of deck is probably more realistic.
Yeah.
But I did want to mention Pyro because it is a lot of fun, and you know the top end, like the payoffs were like Hackdos the Unscarred, which is the red white 6/1.
Oh my, get that card out of here, please.
Yeah, I mean that guy was a haymaker.
Do not put that card into play ever. Or
Samut, Voice of Dissent.
Okay, we've gone off the beat.
Massacre Girl, come on, come at me. But yeah, the real big big takeaway was just that Hostage Taker was a real house in that deck because,
you know, I mean, just getting I definitely up to think four Hostage was Taker reasonable. I think Hostage Taker is a very reasonable sideboard card because can't you take your own things hostage?
What?
Can't you take your own things hostage?
No. Exile Another. Yeah, the printed card says you can, but the digital implementations say Another because I think that was one that they had to errata before it came out. Remember that?
No, but you can take your own cards hostage.
If your opponent controls them. Wait, no, hang on a sec.
No, this is another target creature or artifact. So you can hide your own things under there, or you can like Hostage Taker a small Thalia's Lieutenant and then recast it and pump your team. Like that's what I'm talking about. Like you can still loop it with things.
Okay.
You just can't Hostage Take your own Hostage Taker to do that. But yeah. So like you can hide your own stuff against Wrath decks, or you can like Hostage Take your own like what's the stupid Thraven Inspector to get an extra clue, or if you need to reset your Meddling Mage. No. I mean just like there are things that you can do, like play it as a sideboard card against decks that you need removal against because you don't have Reflector Mage, and then like you have this that you can do. So
yeah, there's really no shortage of targets for that thing, though. Don't you worry.
No, not at all.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something here. Masked Vandal, notably, is a shapeshifter that you know can deal with artifacts and enchantments at 2. So if there's any need for that sooner than 3, then you have it, you know, and then sideboard.
Yeah, so 2 has to die, but yeah.
Yeah, so my biggest interest with this would be black white with a light blue splash for Hostage Taker. But I think there's a lot of value for that. Or a lot of value in black and white. So anyways, I expect it. I think, you know, I've been playing a lot of black-white decks in Historic, and just disrupting these control decks has been, you know, it's made my day. So many people that are trying to play so many slow, dirtily control decks that I just love thought-seizing them to oblivion and then attacking them with the Danto Vanguards and such. Oh, man, I wish that guy was a human.
Just turn one thought-seize. Good enough.
Yeah, that'll do it. So, anyhow, I think that's enough for today. I think we better wrap it up because we're going long. But there's a lot to like about this set, a lot to look forward to, and I'm curious to see what it does to this format. It's going to be a whole different look.
Yeah, it's going to be totally different. And, like, still don't really want to buy into Historic because it requires me to buy in. But, like, I am interested in the ebb and flow of the format at this point. Like, it has a deck that I'm interested in. Like, yeah, I'm a dirtly control deck player, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, I don't know if I really want to, you know.
Oh, man.
Don't know if I really want to do it. Don't want to just be the guy that everyone hates playing the control deck. Like,
yeah, that is totally fair.
Yeah. So, now I'm interested in seeing how the Soul Herder deck develops, but I think they're going to have to do the pilots are going to have to do something to figure out how to deal with, like, the problem of having the curve be a little too high.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of that. It's going to be a little awkward. I'm a little more confident that the humans that can overcome that, there's a little better options, especially with Esper Sentinel. That one's super appealing.
Oh, my God.
Maybe Ephemerate just find something that doesn't like fit perfectly in the plan just to have like some value at one, just to get things going. Or maybe it just bites the bullet and is like, you know, we have to do this whole Llanowar Elf thing. Sorry. One day we'll have some kind of noble hierarch analog and historic and things will all be good and fine. But until then.
Yep.
Here we are. So, anyways, talk to you next time.
Yeah, take it easy, everybody.
Goodbye.
Modern Metacall is a production of CarnockLife.com, where you can find a selection of MTG content, both written and recorded. Looking for deck primers? We've got them. Interested in videos? Try our CKL Play series, where we take the most interesting decks appearing in published results for a spin through MTGO leagues. We've got a team of talented writers specializing in a variety of formats and archetypes. To keep up with Cardnock Life offerings, you can follow us on our Facebook page, facebook.com/CardnockLifePodcast. Thanks is due to ManaTraders.com, MTGCast.com, and TheDiscard.com for their support in making this possible, and thank you for listening, commenting, sharing, and reading Cardnock Life content.